This is a Miskatonic University special report.
I'm here speaking with Mike Mason and Paul Fricker. These are the gentlemen that took it unto themselves to give us a whole new edition of the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. So these are the authors of the 7th edition. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hi there, Dan.
Hi, Dan.
The 7th edition is about to be put into a Kickstarter by Chaosium. So they're basically taking the same model they did with their Horror and the Orient Express, and they're going to let basically the market decide on how fancy this book winds up getting, I think. So Paul and Mike are here to give us a general rundown on the book and also the Kickstarter itself and what we can kind of expect from at least the start of it.
Yeah, sure. Cool.
Paul, do you want to talk about the game first and then we can talk about the Kickstarter? What do you think?
I think launch in and say a bit about the Kickstarter.
Okay.
The Kickstarter is very much about, like you said, Dan, you kind of nailed it, the production of the book, really. So it's very much centered on the rule book itself and the quality of production of the rule book. So I think, you know, the stretch goals and things will be sort of centered around that.
Yeah. Also worth saying that there's the rule book and then there's also the investigator's handbook. So both books will be offered on the Kickstarter from the day one. So backers will be able to either choose either or book or both books in whatever kind of format they choose, really.
Okay, so this is going to be kind of a successor to the Investigator's Companion that they had already had out?
Effectively, yeah. I mean, it builds upon that, and as such, Chaosium's kind of taken the view that the main rule book is, very much obviously a keeper book because it contains a lot of the additional material that, you know, keepers would want, you know, regarding monsters and spells and advice for running games, whereas the Investigator's Handbook focuses very much on players of the game. So there's expanded and more optionality for creating investigators. There's also additional chapters on playing a game, you know, in terms of from a player's perspective, in terms of how to go about investigation and the kind of tools and equipment, weapons and the kind of things like that that, you know, investigators like to sort of get hold of.
Okay. So will the character creation rules be in both books?
Yes, they will. Yeah. Both books have got the character creation rules. However, the player's book, the Investigator's Handbook, has more optionality and some additional material in there.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So it's got a whole host of occupations and kind of investigator groups and so on.
Yeah, I mean, the occupations is a good example. In the main rule book, there's a range of occupations, a kind of ones you would kind of expect to find in Call of Cthulhu. But in the player's book, it's a whole chapter with over 100 occupations in there.
So it's more like you might pick up the main rule book and it would be kind of what you would expect from maybe NPCs professions.
No, it has got the main, you know, you've got your professors and journalists, all the kind of the mainstay kind of investigator types. Okay. In terms of occupations. But obviously building on the previous kind of investigator books, yeah. Which obviously had a wider range of occupations. We've taken that on board and, utilized a lot of those and added some new ones in as well.
All right. So closer to what we already see, the career list in the main book, you've got about 20 of them, whereas there's like 110 or something in the Investigator's Companion.
Yeah.
Very similar
yeah.
to what's already there. Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. And you've also reworked the shopping list, basically, the investigators' items and price lists and all that. You've reworked that too, right?
Yeah, and you, in fact, gave us a hand to do that as well, didn't you, Dan?
Yeah. That part I wasn't going to bring out, but...
We couldn't have done it without you, Dan.
But no, it was a valued contribution helping us to, get the prices and get the range of equipment right. So it was very helpful, and thanks for that, Dan.
Oh, you're very welcome. I was thrilled to be able to help out with this. Is that going to be part of both books or just the investigators or the source core book or what?
Again, equipment lists are in both books. The main rule book has got a very comprehensive list. And with the investigators book, it's the same list. However, we've added in a few extra things, again, just to give players a little bit more range of some of the items.
That makes a lot of sense. Because, yeah, the Investigator's Companion books, that's one of my all-time favorite supplements for the game. I've used that so many times.
What kind of stuff do you use from it, primarily?
Well, the copies I have it from back when it was two separate volumes.
Yeah.
I've got the careers book, basically, where it's all the different careers options, as well as I think that one also breaks down, like, it explains every skill in the game and different ways it can be used, and I really like that one. I go through there for any NPCs that I might need to do, and then the other one is all equipment, and who doesn't like the shopping list?
Indeed.
And it just helps to bring out the flavor of the era.
Yeah. The handbook's got the kind of the whole kind of big list of equipment, and the main rule book's kind of got a more like the main rule book now, really, a more condensed list.
Because right now the equipment's like one page per era.
Right.
Yeah. And I think ours has built on that and added things for both books essentially, but obviously more so for the players' book. So we certainly did a lot of homework on looking up additional items and just sort of really filling out those lists a bit more to give both players and keepers a little bit more to work with.
Now, for the main core book, I assume that the player's book is going to be more of a 1920s-centric. What about the core rule book? Is that going to be more era-agnostic?
No, it kind of focuses on the 1920s and the modern day, because since the main rule book was written, there's been a whole host of different periods. You know, you've got your Gaslight, your Roman, you've got your Futuristic, you've got Dark Ages. So we started, you know, back when we sort of started the project, we started toying around with what eras to put in. But the main rule book is, you know, it's a big book already. And we figured that just putting in those two main things. So it's the 1920s when Lovecraft was kind of writing and basing the stories. And of course, there's the modern day, and it was modern day to him when he was writing them. So you've kind of got those two periods that it focuses on. And the other periods, you know, there's just been the Gaslight book come out and so on. So the other periods are kind of catered for by those other books.
Okay.
Each of those other books have got an existing, you know, main book out for them, whether it's Dreamlands, Dark Ages or whatever. So, you know, people wanting to play in those areas, there's something already there for them. So the main book, you know, really focuses on the kind of standard settings, as it were, which is, as Paul said, the 20s and modern day.
That makes a lot of sense. Because you're right, the other eras, they do have very comprehensive and well-written books to give you the details on that era. And whereas modern day, we've got adventure books for it. And, well, Delta Green, of course, is basically like a massive modern era campaign setting. You know, even though it's all split off on its own now.
I mean, Delta Green takes modern day and kind of makes it a whole new thing of its own, whereas we've just kind of we haven't created a modern day setting. It's just, you know, there's modern day and, you know, you do with it as you will.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to let people basically create their own scenarios and adventures in whatever era they want, and then they could just pick up the book that suits whatever time frame they're looking for.
Yeah, very much so.
Now, in the previous seminars you guys have had in the past, you've talked about all the different things you're looking at, you know, tweaking this, changing that, keeping this or that. What are some of the things that actually ended up at the end of the editing process wound up being things that you've decided to keep or scrap and that sort of thing? What are some of the overall changes that wound up happening at the end?
There was a lot of things that sort of came and went over the whole process, but we kind of weeded it out to the most important changes, really, I think. So the ones that have stayed there have been the pushing the skill mechanic, pushing the skill rock. The spending of luck is very much in there, but as an optional rule. We figured that some people really like it, some people don't. So if we put it in there as an option, it's there, everybody's happy. And it doesn't kind of integrate itself into the whole game, that it can just be written as an optional thing that people can put in or not.
Okay.
Yeah, I think just to sort of echo that on the using luck points is, whereas before, certainly in the playtest, it was a lot more inbuilt into sort of other aspects of the game, such as character backgrounds and things like that, that's now completely divorced. So as Paul said, it's very much a standalone kind of unit you can bolt into the game if that suits your style of play. But otherwise, you just ignore it if that's not what you want to do.
That's one of the strengths of the BRP rule system in general, is that it's got all these modular things that you can do with it.
Yeah. So some of the other changes we've made, we've kind of accommodated some suggestions and for options, because obviously we know that people are going to read a certain section and say, well, I'm not really that keen on that. So we've kind of presented the kind of obvious other options as a sort of starting point for people to, you know, if they want to customize things a little to their own taste.
Mm-hmm.
Other changes, off the top of my head, I'd say combat would be a change. So you've got some condensing of some of the combat skills and a kind of an opposed combat role. Okay. So it's a slightly different dynamic to the field of combat.
Yeah, and so the other sort of change within what Paul's saying about combat is the grapple. The grapple rule has changed and kind of become what we're calling combat maneuvers, which makes it actually more flexible and gives a lot more optionality for what you actually do during combat. So rather than simply just grappling someone, you can still do that, but actually you can also do other things as well that are actually, you know, not quite the same as, you know, punching somebody. It's actually doing something within that kind of combat arena that's you know, slightly different.
Yeah, grapple rules are something that I haven't really seen work all that well in any game I've picked up. So I'm looking forward to seeing sure. exactly what you ended up with at the end of the day.
Because
grapple rules are tricky.
The other thing to say on the kind of optionality of some of the rules, what we've done is for each of the kind of main chapters that has obviously game rules in it, you've got what we would call like the standard game, which is, you know, pretty similar to what Call of Cthulhu has always been, but obviously with some tweaks, as we said, in combat and with pushing the pushing skills. But at the end of those chapters, we've actually put an optional rule section in. So there's a range of different rules that, again, could be bolted in or ignored, depending, again, on the style of play for your group. So, again, just to give people that kind of a bit of a toolkit, effectively, within the rulebook, so they could make the game that they want to play.
Excellent. Yeah, that way the keeper and the players can kind of talk together a little bit about, okay, what type of options do we want here for our campaign, and just kind of turn them on and off as needed.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah, and obviously that caters to, you know, there are certain optional rules that might make the game a bit more pulpy, others, you know, less so. So again, you know, different groups, you know, like different playing styles, or you know, different adventures or scenarios might, you know, call for that kind of thing, and that you want to kind of really emphasize in that particular game for that session, and you can use that if that's what you want to.
I mean, I would say damage and healing would be a key aspect that people have a very personal take on. You know, some people want recovery to be really quick and they think that's right, and other people think, you know, well, you've got broken bones, you should be, you know, out of action for a month. And so you can't do one thing to really satisfy people. People are going to want to kind of tweak that a little bit.
Yeah.
So hopefully we've kind of allowed, you know, given people the tools to do that.
Well, that's excellent. That just helps to make it for whatever flavor somebody wants to have for their game. Because, yeah, I tend to lean more towards the action-y pulp side, whereas, you know, my co-hosts tend to prefer the more gritty, dark realism, and sure. So that way you just kind of work it for either direction. And now, as for the Kickstarter, what all type of ideas are in the works for the Kickstarter as it initially goes on? I know there's going to be all sorts of stretch goals that are going to be hidden, that have to be unlocked, and all that. That's normal, but what are some of the initial things?
Well, I think initially, just going back to what Paul said originally, it is very much about the nature and format of the two books. And obviously, initially, in terms of the initial pledge levels, there would be, you know, the option to, you know, just buy them as PDFs, buy them in softback format, or buy them in hardback format. And, you know, it's fairly, I guess, in a sense, fairly vanilla. But as you can appreciate with the nature of Kickstarters, all that is very, you know, changeable. And obviously, one of the things Chaosm is keen to do with the Kickstarter is listen to people's feedback. If people want to see, you know, more color, for example, or new artwork or that kind of thing, they're very open to sort of building, you know, and, you know, we've had discussions around those kind of ideas of how that might go and where that might take the book in that, you know, the books in that regard. So a lot of those are, you know, up for grabs in that respect.
Nice.
Yeah. Like Mike said, it's very much about the production of the book. And we are looking for people to, you know, chime in and sort of say what they would like to see. Because if people come forth with some good ideas for stretch goals, you know, maybe we haven't thought of, if they fit with, you know, KOZoom's ideas, then they could be picked up on. So a word to the listeners out there to, you know, just let us know their ideas.
Yeah, okay. You've got the, you know, the initial pledge levels. And obviously, as you said, Dan, there's, you know, if, you know, the Kickstarter does well, then obviously stretch goals will start to be unlocked. But, you know, I know that KOZoom have a lot of ideas about, you know, additional pledge goals and some, you know, some really kind of crazy and kind of really cool ones as well. Which, you know, they're talking about, you know, dropping in during the course of the actual, timing of the Kickstarter. So they won't all be there day one. They'll sew them in. So, you know, people can, either, you know, change, you know, up their pledge levels effectively if they want to take part with some of the other kind of things that come on board. And, you know, so there's a lot of reason to kind of keep an eye on the website, really, on the Kickstarter website, because it will be, it will be updated pretty much daily from what we understand.
Excellent.
Yeah, I think a daily update will be the case.
Is there an estimated time of when the book would be released? Are we looking at maybe a Gen Con release or later?
I think KOZoom obviously don't want to kind of promise what they can't deliver, as I think anyone with a, you know, with a Kickstarter. And I think, you know, they would love to get something out by Gen Con, but obviously they are already committed to making sure that the the revamped Horror in the Orient Express is out for Gen Con. So obviously they want to make sure that product is out. So it's more likely that we're looking for the 7th edition books to really probably be around Halloween, around the end of October, probably. Okay. Obviously, if they can get them done before, they will, but they don't want to, you know, promise what they can't deliver.
Oh, that makes sense.
In the time. Yeah.
Yeah, because nobody wants this to be a bad release. So I think people can be willing to wait for that, especially if it's given up front saying, hey, this is the general time frame we're looking at.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's just fine. So, okay. Now, said that initially, in most cases that I've seen, the books will start off as being soft cover and then hardback is like a stretch goal. You think that they're planning on having it available in both soft cover and hardback initially?
Yeah. Paul, go on. You think your answer. Yeah,
I think we've got the soft cover or the hardback, and then the stretch goals are going to build the quality of either, you know, whichever one of those two you choose. So whether it be, you know, more color illustrations, more money spent on artwork, upping the quality of the production of both books.
Okay. Yeah. Nice. So this one just kind of occurred to me now, back to the book a little bit. Have you made any changes or additions or subtractions to the adventures that come in the book itself? I was just kind of curious about that.
We've at the moment, certainly there are three scenarios in the main core rule book, one of which it's got to be the haunting. You can't.
Okay. I was wondering if you were leaving that in or
Paul may probably speak a bit about that. He's did a lot of work on the haunting. And then there's two other new scenarios in there. One's called Amidst the Ancient Trees by a guy called Matthew Sanderson. And then there's another scenario called Crimson Letters by Alan Bly. And they're both, as I say, brand new and pretty cool.
Okay.
Paul, do you want to talk about the haunting a bit?
Yeah, I will. I just say that both Amidst the Trees and Crimson Letters went out to the playtesters. So they've seen quite a bit of playtesting and some really good feedback from them. When it comes to the haunting, it remains pretty much, you know, the classic haunting, the scenario. There's been very little change to it, but what I've done is kind of gone through it and put in keeper's notes and advice on, particularly for a new keeper, really taking them, kind of holding their hand, kind of going through it, saying, you know, you might want to do this here, suggest this to your players, you know, really kind of trying to give them sound advice embedded in the text.
Okay.
So I think, as you know, so often I've seen, like, on forums, you know, I'm running Call of Cthulhu tonight, I'm running The Haunting, is there any advice, how do I do it, and so on. So, you know, because I think Call of Cthulhu is one of those game books that, you know, new players that have never role played before might pick up. And I don't think, you know, there's Dungeons and Dragons, obviously a lot of people start on that. I mean, there's a whole multitude of role-playing games out there, but I wonder how many of those games that new players actually pick up. But I think, you know, Call of Cthulhu is probably an entry point for quite a lot of people. You know, they've got an interest in H.P. Lovecraft or, you know, general horror role-playing or whatever, yeah. General horror story, and they want to get into a game.
Yeah, it was my first RPG.
Was it? Right.
Yep.
Yeah, cool.
So, yeah, I just really wanted to sort of deliver that to a new keeper, that you can almost just have a flick through the scenario and then sit down and run it and have some advice on what to do as he goes through it.
Oh, that's excellent. Yeah, cool.
And we took that as a kind of starting point, especially for a new keeper. We would advise that you run The Haunting first because of that extra advice in there. And then each of the following two scenarios builds upon that, and they kind of grow a little bit bigger and grow a little bit more, give the keeper a little bit more freedom. Till the end scenario is very much what you'd kind of find in a supplement book. There's a plot there, but there's questions for the keeper to answer for themselves, how they want to sort of take the plot in a different direction. It's, you know, the tools are there for them to do it, you know, and it's all there. But, you know, it kind of, hopefully the idea was the three scenarios help to coach a new keeper through, whilst an experienced keeper, well they'll just take them and run with them anyway, you know, that the information is there for what they need to do with them.
That's excellent. That sounds like that's going to be very helpful. Because, yeah, that's one thing that we've tried to promote on the show is new players, new keepers, and bringing all new people into the game, and having those kind of tips and tricks and helpful advice for running it is fantastic.
Yeah, I think you did a great job of exploring the rules, you know, in your earlier episodes. That was really good.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, definitely.
And we're going to wind up having to go through the whole thing again.
Well, not too much.
All that hopefully. New content we provided for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a wonderful time to be doing something like this, because you guys, you know, there's always new stuff coming out, and with a core book coming out new, I mean, that's just more stuff for us to talk about.
Sure. Mm. I mean, obviously we haven't actually said this during our chat here, but just to really, you know, emphasize the point that it is backwards compatible. It, you know, we have talked about some new rules here and there, but they fit into the old rules very well. And, you know, there is a few bits of conversion to do, but it's nothing you can't do on the fly during the middle of a game. You know, we've tested that with the play testers, and the feedback has been very positive about that yeah, you could sit down and prep a scenario, or if you just pick it up from the book and run it on the fly, yeah, you can do that as well. Really, they're very minor in terms of some of the conversion kind of stuff, so you know, it is, you know, fully backwards compatible with the existing supplements, so they don't go out of date in that sense.
Good. Mm. Yeah, that would be I feel that would be a huge problem if it wasn't compatible.
Sure.
With the 30 years previous of material out there.
No,
yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, that's definitely been at the forefront all the way through.
Yeah,
working on the rules, and it's been at times kind of quite a constraint, because you've had to kind of think, well, I'd like to do this with the rules, but it wouldn't be backwards compatible. So you kind of had to, you know, it's been a constraint, really. It's having to make sure that it all works. Yeah,
I think that you know, sums up very much the kind of the process we've, you know, the journey Paul and I have gone through with the whole project is, you know, some, if you listen to some of the very early kind of seminars and interviews we did about it, there's a lot of kind of, you know, new ideas in there that actually over the time that we've been working on the project, we've honed and honed back and you know, and taken back or stripped down, and to really back to, you know, what is the basis of Call of Cthulhu? What are the core rules and what enhanced them and what tweaks them maybe here and there. But there are a lot of, you know, there are a lot of parts in the rules that, you know, that there are no changes effectively, but, you know, but that's because what we've done is we've honed and we've honed and we've honed, you know, we started out there with a lot of ideas, and then we've, you know, really effectively, you know, just, you know, squashed them down into what is the real core of it.
Yeah. That's one of the beauty of the BRP rule set, is that it takes care of resolving issues and then gets out of your way.
Yeah.
And that's just one of the best things about it. Why, when I play other games, the rules just seem to, you know, sit on your chest and keep you from telling your story half the time. So,
I'm glad to hear
that the spirit of BRP is going to continue on, and we're going to just have some additional options to play with and be able to change up our game some. You know, I personally, my group, whenever we were doing, as we've said on the show, Push was a big success.
Oh, yeah, I was pleased to hear that. Yeah, I listened to that. You were saying about the candle in the cellar and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was just the intention.
Yeah.
And, oh, yeah, because you said about you weren't sure if it's in the text that the players kind of throw out ideas for pushing roles. I think one of you guys said about that, and it very much is, you know, that very much is the case. You know, you are kind of encouraged that if the other players, depending on your group, but if the other players want to sort of throw in ideas for what might happen if the role goes wrong, because so often other players come up with better ideas than the keeper.
Yeah, and in this case, I mean, everybody I'm playing with are also experienced keepers. So we've all got that kind of experience under our belts, and we can start throwing those ideas back and forth. And it just makes a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm just thinking of mindful to, you know, thinking about advice and things like that. And, you know, there's a, well, I guess it's a rewrite with lots of new material in the core book for the keepers. There's a chapter called For Keepers that there's a lot of cool information, obviously, about, you know, the obvious kind of stuff about, you know, how to write a scenario, how to run a scenario, and running the game in general. But there's lots of hints and tips in there. And we wanted to mirror that with players because it's not always been there in so many games, not just Cthulhu, that you know, about, you know, how to make the most of the game as a player in terms of, you know, your character, how you work with other people around the table, and, you know, bringing your character out and that kind of thing. And that kind of information is, as I say, all in the Investigator's book as well.
Excellent. Yeah, bringing the setting to life is something that kind of everybody has to work on and help with.
Yeah, very much. Yeah.
For the Kickstarter, do you know whether or not the Kickstarter is going to be set for like the maximum time frame, or what kind of time frame can we expect for this once it goes live? I know I've seen Kickstarters that are set for, you know, for quite a while. I think the Orient Express one went on for several weeks.
It did. Yeah,
I think it was 60 days.
60 days, I think. Yeah.
I was saying, I think you can expect a month.
Okay.
Of Kickstarter. Yeah.
Okay, just the 1 month time frame. Okay.
Kind of, yeah, standard 30 days. Yeah.
Because I was thinking, you know, the 60 worked really well for Orient Express, but.
Yeah, I guess there's an argument both ways, but I mean, it's very much my perception that once these things go up on the net, I don't know, it spreads like wildfire. So everybody kind of hears about it pretty quickly. I guess there's that building thing that takes, you know, the stretch goals and so on that take up the time. But I think that's what it's going to be.
Okay. Any other things? Like, most of the time, whenever Kickstarters are released, they usually give you one or two of the stretch goals to start with, just so you'd know what is being kind of worked up to. Do you know if any of those have been put into place yet?
I know that there's been a lot of working out of what possible stretch goals there may be, but I think initially, you know, day one, I'm not sure there's going to be much information about stretch goals on the page. Okay. But I think if you read between the lines, you could probably make some pretty good educated guesses about what might follow.
Yes, I know that on forums and my own personal preferences, looking at like some of the other editions of the book, like the French edition, just gorgeous. Yep. And I could see that sort of layout being a stretch goal.
Yeah, certainly all those things are possible, I would say. And certainly, as I think Paul said earlier, you know, in terms of people that are pledging into the Kickstarter, who then can obviously join the forum on the Kickstarter about the project. Obviously, you know, certainly we and Chaosium, and we know, want to hear people's ideas, and you know, if people, you know, want, you know, rather than a black and white book, they want to see more color in it, whether that's color plates or go to a full color, or they love the German layout or the Spanish layout or the French layout and say we want to see a bit more of that, or can we do that, then obviously it's all worth feeding into the pot, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
that's the beauty of crowdfunding.
Oh, this is it. This is it, definitely. The other thing on the site that Chaosium will be adding to, there's a what is called the Curiosity Shop, which you'll find towards the bottom of the Kickstarter, which is kind of all those kind of crazy little add-ons that, you know, whether you want a, you know, T-shirt or, you know, other bits and pieces. And it starts off fairly small, the shop, but I know, again, they've got a lot of ideas of some cool little add-ons that people might like, that the shop will grow probably daily with little bits of coolness that people can, you know, opt in if they want to, you know, pitch in a few extra dollars for that particular thing or not.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, those are a lot of fun. Something else I was curious about, just as a point of note, because I was actually looking through my book earlier today, and does yours, the new edition, is it still going to have, like, the Call of Cthulhu story in there? Or has that been pulled out?
Yeah. No, yes. No. I was pretty adamant that it stayed in. in the core rule book, because
a lot of people didn't want it, wasn't there?
Yeah, a lot of surprising. Well, a lot of veteran players were like, "Well, there's no need for that. People have got it already. They already know the story." And it's like, "Well, yeah, but the rule book is for you, but it's also for all those people that have never bought it yet and who haven't read Call of Cthulhu and don't know who Lovecraft is, and it's their first exposure. So it's really important that that story is in there."
Because most people are coming to it through knowing, "Oh, there's a plushy Cthulhu and there's Cthulhu cartoons and
all the other pop culture references."
Yeah, and they've probably never actually read the actual, Lovecraft's actual work.
Because I was thinking about that earlier, and whenever I was looking through my book, I'm like, it sure does take a while to flip through this to get to the actual rule book. But I can see where that's a worthwhile trade-off for new people.
This is, it's how you use a book, isn't it? The first time when you first get a role-playing book, you tend to, 9 out of 10 times, you tend to read it, from the front to the end. Read it like a book. And then when you start playing with it, it completely changes. And what the idea would be, you'd move all the chapters around, to where you want them as the keeper for what's handy for you. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, books don't work like that in that sense. So I guess why, PDFs are quite handy, aren't they, in that sense? Because you can mark them up. But
So we're kind of expecting this to go live at any time now. I'll keep everybody up to date on the website and podcast and everything else whenever the Kickstarter actually goes live.
Yeah, that would be great. Thanks, Dan.
Do you know if either of you will be able to make it out to the States for Gen Con or Necronomicon?
Certainly not Necronomicon, but we hope, we're trying to see what we can do to both be at Gen Con if we can.
Oh, excellent. Yeah.
When is Necronomicon? Isn't that the one that just went on?
No, it's later on in the
year, like a week or two after Gen Con. That's the one that's convention in Providence.
Right.
That's like the huge Lovecraftian one that everyone's trying to get out to. Most of the authors I've spoken to, they're all going to that, but not Gen Con.
We'd love to go, certainly. Yeah. But if anyone wants to put us up, then
it might work.
In all probability, yeah.
One of my co-hosts got space with somebody in a room for going to Necronomicon, so he's going to that.
Oh, great.
That's brilliant. Brilliant.
So, yeah, two of my co-hosts are going to Necronomicon, and I'm planning on going to Gen Con.
Well, we'll see you then, hopefully.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, anything else that you guys can think of that you might want to share about the upcoming project or book or Kickstarter or anything?
I think we've pretty much covered it for now. I think, just keep watching the Kickstarter, and hopefully it'll be up in a couple of days. And, next time we chat to you, that there'll be more to discuss.
Yeah, then we can actually see it and talk about some of the details that are on there. But
yeah,
sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So sure and have you guys back, and we're going to be banging the drum the whole time that the Kickstarter's up and try and get people to know about it and pitch in, make this thing the best project it can be.
That's cool. Great. No, we really appreciate all your help, and we're fans of the podcast, so thanks again.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much, Dan.